Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course I would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course I want to play at the weekend.
All right, you're welcome along. It is the Ryan Line. It is Thursday. Shane Ryan, how are you?
I'm great, Nathan. How are you?
I'm good. The people of the United Kingdom are preparing for your arrival, as always. Hopefully, the food at the Open Championship this year is a step up on last year.
Yeah, I think it's the same people every time. So let me tell you about the food. Here's my take on the food. It's for lunch and dinner. It's sludge. It's just black, like brown, gray sludge. It's terrible.
Lasagna, it's called. I quite like this.
Yeah, no, it's so bad. It's so bad. However, the breakfast, the English breakfast or Scottish breakfast or whatever they call it, I'm looking forward to it so much. To the point that I think I might hack the system by just going two breakfasts back to back in the morning and then just wait till we get out to go get better food somewhere in Southport.
Wow. We haven't got sued yet by the caterers for the Open Championship, but it can't be far away. I think I've always done enough to slightly defend them. My biggest issue is you get, this is very inside baseball, as always with us, of you get what, £30 per day
to spend.
But your dinner, and I think once upon a time it used to always cover you for the day. So you'd be able to have breakfast, lunch, a couple of bottles of water, and maybe a bar of chocolate or something like that. Whereas now I'm going up for lunch and they're like, yeah, you now owe £3. I said, but I only had a little breakfast and a little bit of lunch. Yeah. And I'm trying to not eat a dinner and save all my per diem. But no, you go splashing the cash. You lose a lot of money. It's the one thing I won't miss about. You end up, no matter how much your work is paying for you, you end up spending a lot of money.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it is tough. And it's like, you know, England's generally an expensive country in the cities anyway. So, yeah, I'm trying to think. And the other thing that's annoying is they give you the tiniest little water bottle that you can refill yourself, but it's good for like two sips. That's the biggest cultural difference between the U.S. and Europe, I think, we just love our giant waters, our giant refillable waters. It's a little better in England and Ireland than it is in like France. In France, it's like you have to know somebody just to get like at a restaurant to get a carafe de eau. It's like that's the one thing where I'm
you're
like,
right. It's funny. I hadn't noticed how small it was until my son started playing golf and he brings out my little Open Championship water thing, but he also brings another water thing with him as well. And I was like, why don't you just bring the one? He's like, oh, because this is what the players get. I know. I was like, that's what the media get at the Open. No, that's what the players. I was like, no. Okay, let yourself believe it. Yeah, that was actually Brooks Koepka's water bottle once upon a time. They dumped it to us.
But man,
anyways, we're burying the league. Never mind all that. The black pudding. You love the black pudding. You can give her your review. I'm off for the next 2 weeks. That's again how my life has changed. I'm off for the Open and the week after. So,
are you going somewhere? Are you going on vacation?
I'm going on vacation. Yeah. So I'll be watching a lot of golf poolside.
Where are you going?
Italy.
Oh, come on. That's great.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah. It's going to be nice. It's going to be hot again in a very Irish way. I'm like, it might be too hot.
Yeah. No, it is.
Which is always a concern. Dave McIntyre is going to be presenting the Ryan Line. So this might actually be our last ever Ryan Line because Dave is so good. They may
just be like, once you go Dave, you'll never go Nathan.
Exactly. And you may be cancelled is the other risk, obviously, that's always there with Dave. So look forward to that for the next couple of weeks, everybody.
Okay.
Keep your questions in on the Discord. We are obviously burying the lead, which is Shane Ryan's soccer ball review of the United States bringing great shame upon our great game.
Can I just tell you something? This, you know, I wrote about, I had to write about this. So I made up this angle of like, you know, the US Ryder Cup team, what they can learn from it. This team had all the vibes behind it. Even people who hate the US government, which is everybody abroad, even they were kind of like begrudgingly like, yeah, this team's fun. They're playing well. This red card thing, by Trump getting it reversed, he stuck his nose into this. He ruined the vibes for it. He made everybody hate us. And the team came out playing defensive and tentative. Now, all the soccer people, all the big soccer, arrogant soccer knowers are going, oh, Belgium's just so good. They just beat you. Like, I'm sorry. I know they looked 8 billion times better than us and we looked like shit. They tied Iran 0-0, okay? They needed to collapse from Senegal even to get to the round of 16. That team was not beyond us. I'm not saying – I think, you know, normal game with the crowd behind us playing well, like, we can easily beat them. I'm not saying we would, but it's a coin flip at least. So it's like – but instead, like, they made us – Trump made us defensive. He just completely ruined it. Like, he ruins every fucking thing. Sorry, I'm getting sweary here. Yeah, it just disappointed me so much. What a horrible way to go out for such a good tournament. However, we got to root for England now because I want to be in England when they are doing it. I want to feel the atmosphere in the semifinal and the final. I'm going to be there next week. So I even though Erling Haaland is like my favorite human being on the planet, I got to pull for England this weekend.
Now, look it. I'm not the most anti-English person in the world, yeah. You know, in comparison to, you know, some of my... compatriots, but England winning it is just that step too far, I think, for all of us.
Can you give me them losing heartbreakingly in the final?
Well, this is like... I feel we've had the best possible, where because there is a bit more interest in it and that there's more coverage and all of that when England are involved, yeah. And we consume so much of that, and you know, you always like to see people lose the run of themselves a little bit, and you know, if the Irish were there, we would lose the run of ourselves more than anybody, right. But the fear of the nonsense we would have to put up with for the following 6, 12 months, 60 years, if England were to go and win this, is just, it's too much to bear. But yes, I'd imagine if you're there Tuesday, Wednesday night now, and they're playing in the semi-final and they were to win that, yeah, it'll be pretty wild.
I have to say, and you know, I'm kind of with you on England or whatever, but two things. First of all, Harry Kane, I forget who they were playing, but him scoring the two goals, I think it was the round of 32. That was pretty impressive. This is way bigger. The Mexico match was one of the most thrilling things I think I've ever seen as a sports fan without a really big rooting interest in either team. It was, I just can't describe how tense it was. How I thought it was a really brave performance from England. Like Jude Bellingham is like my hero now. I don't know. I'm kind of England-pilled all of a sudden, at least on the soccer team. I'm not going farther beyond that. But come on, to win in the Azteca like that when they were just like getting pummeled for 45 minutes, it was truly, truly spectacular stuff. I was on the edge of my seat for 2 hours. To me, that's like, I'm not a big soccer guy, but that was like peak soccer.
No, it was a good game. But listen, you bring that to Dave McIntyre next week and see how you get on, all right?
Okay.
Let's get into our questions. First one from The Beard. Ticket prices for the Open at St. Andrews in 2027 up from £95 in 2022 to £150. Yeah, I get it. Market forces, et cetera, et cetera. I guess my question is, what happens to the money? The R&A are not really a profit center with shareholders. They're kind of owned by us. Where's the reinvestment in golf? Where's the players to show for it? Bob Mack is all we have in Scotland. As usual, Norway and Denmark seem to be doing far better. Ireland as well. The R&A pays their CEO £900,000. They built up reserves of £300 million. Is this a vehicle to serve golf or to serve its employees?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we were just talking about this with Augusta the other day, and it was a big point of discussion with them. I think at organizations like these, you have two factions at this point. You have your snooty traditionalists, right, who have run the show for a long time. They're kind of insular. You know, they put on this tournament and outside people come in and it's a big deal every year. But what they're most concerned with is their reputation and tradition. And then on the other side, you've got the capitalists who have come in and their concern is making money like any capitalist. And at Augusta, the capitalists are winning big time. Like you saw it with their merch tent. They have outdone or outmaneuvered or whatever you know traditionalists, the snooty elitist faction that hangs on, and it's turned into a bit of a circus there, right? It's turned into Black Friday at their merch tent. You know, whether the RNA is falling in the same direction, I don't know, but yeah, that's quite an increase. I mean, you know, what is that, like a, I don't know, you know, percentage increase, but like a 33% increase in a few years. That's crazy. But I mean, again, it's all about making money for certain people. I'm not an expert on how it's reinvested or whatever, or if they overpaid their executives and all that. But I do think it's terrible. Well, here's a great example. My colleague Jamie was talking about this. You know, they had this beautiful range at Birkdale and these beautiful locker rooms. And that's the case with a lot of these places. None of them are being used because the range is a, you know, spectator village or whatever. And they, and I don't know what the locker room, they've got a different thing going for the players and they build a bigger range for the players and that, but isn't part of the whole thing that's special supposed to be like the settings of these places, like there's locker rooms and being on site. Jamie told a good story from Troon when Xander won, they brought him in the locker room afterward for whatever purpose. And this was on Sunday and he goes, "Hey, this is really cool in here. This is a really cool locker room." I mean, he hadn't seen it all week. Huh. And so, yeah, like, are you just not tied to the space anymore?
Yeah.
I'm getting a little rambly, but I just watched the 71 Open, the end of it at Birkdale, with Trevino beating this guy Liu from Taiwan. Unbelievable. Like, I watched the Open film. It's so funny. I recommend all people watch it. I'm going to write something about it next week. But the atmosphere was so organic and so nice and just very, like, it's like, yeah, you're just out there existing in this space with the people from the space. Everybody's having a good time. There weren't even gallery ropes, which is crazy. But it's like something has certainly been lost in the corporatization of all this stuff. So I guess it's my long-winded way of saying, like, I'm on the side of the snobby insular elitists, I think, when it comes to this like debate.
Yeah, I think a lot of these organizations are all the same in that they bring in insane amounts of money, but they give it all back to the game, except for the bit that they don't get back, which right. is yeah. running costs, you know, the cost of doing business, which can be substantial yeah. when you're running an organization of this size. And again, if you're bringing in 300 million, what's 900 grand to your CEO?
Yeah, exactly. I know. But yeah. And it's just, you know, they'll come out and they'll say, "Oh, here's what we're doing for golf and youth and all that kind of stuff." But I don't know, especially in this day and age, anyone who safeguards the spirit of something is like holy to me. Like I kind of go in that direction.
Here's one left over from last week. Watching Joaquin Niemann blow up in the final round of the European Tour. Is he the biggest loser with LIV? Felt on the cusp of being a proper top 10 player. Looks nowhere near it now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Niemann was always somebody, even before LIV, who you're like, he's not really playing as well as he should in the majors, despite being looking like a future superstar or even like a current superstar. I don't think that, yeah, I think maybe he's the biggest loser. I think Rahm, you have to point to, is really something's happened to him, even though he kept succeeding on LIV. Something happened in the majors for him a little bit. You know, Bryson's the biggest winner, I think. But yeah, I think maybe he's one of the biggest losers. It's hard to get to say what he would have done, but he struggles. He struggles in these big moments, and I don't know why. And maybe it'll change. Still very young, so we'll see.
You mentioned Augusta there. What do you think is stopping Augusta from hosting a women's Masters and a seniors Masters?
Well, again, what's stopping them is that they're traditionalists, right? They didn't even let a woman in for a really long time, okay? Now they do their, you know, their ANWA, so I think that's their version of the Women's Masters. You know, a Seniors Masters, getting people on Augusta. Here's the thing. Augusta, by its pedigree, is not a group that wants everybody on their course ever, except for the Masters. And everything that's changed have been, like, in very slow increments over years and years and years. But that's not their thing, right? They want their, and look, part of the reason people enjoy it, you know, you can scoff at it and you can be like, these people are unbelievable snobs and all their tradition and all that. But that aura is what makes it what it is, right? That aura is what took them from being the newest major to being the most important major, at least in America. And certainly having the best brand of any major, you know, they're very good at that. So look, if they keep opening it up, you know, like when they brought Dude Perfect on to throw Nerf balls around, like stuff like that, you're like, okay, like you're kind of jiving with this modern thing now, but you're chipping away at your aura at the same time. You're constantly chipping away. So if they did, I wouldn't surprise me if they did something like that, but it would be a money grab or a you know, clout grab in some way. And I'm like, again, I don't like it. I don't like it. Pull back. Pull back.
I would like to see a, now maybe I don't care, a seniors, masters.
Ugh, who can, would you really?
No, I think we have a question on that, actually. Hey, lads, love the pod. Where should senior majors rank in terms of legacy? Does Harrington's seven majors, in quotation marks, seven majors, rank him above others who have three proper majors? So if you're to look at three-time major winners, does Harrington's four senior titles put him at a higher level than the other guys on three?
Absolutely not. Absolutely, completely not. It's they shouldn't even have senior golf competitively. They should abolish the entire thing. It's a fucking joke. Who wants to watch these guys? I know people actually do want to watch these guys. I think it's great. Look, there's some mild interest I have. I love Patrick Harrington. So good for him for winning. But no.
So I'm looking at the three-time major winners so far. Jordan Spieth, obviously. Let's see. He's a bit away from seniors. Vijay Singh. Three regular majors. And how many senior majors does Vijay have then, I wonder?
I'll look it up.
Vijay's senior PGA Tour. Just won the Seniors Player Championship in 2018. So right. Do you rate Padraig Harrington as a greater player than Vijay Singh because Padraig's continued that on?
No, because look, you should be judged by your athletic prime, okay? Padraig is not gonna wouldn't win the Senior Open if they let everybody play in it, right? He would not obviously. How they fare when they're like 55 years old is just sort of a footnote.
It's like, I love your idea there. You know, Padraig wouldn't win the Seniors Open if it was just the Open, which we actually have proof of next week. I'd love it if somebody took like a court case. Jordan Spieth's like, why can't I just play seniors? I will be the best guy out there. Like, I know I'm only 35, but like, you can't just bring in a rule saying that you have to be fit. Like, you wouldn't get away with this in doing it the other way around.
It's discriminatory. So, that's a great who would be the golfer who would bring that lawsuit to get access? That Patrick would be Reed. So funny. Huh?
Patrick Reed.
Maybe. So,
no comment.
Yeah, right. I just think, like, it's... No, I mean, like, what this measures is something that's not unimpressive, which is that you keep playing good golf until you're old and you stay in shape and all that kind of stuff, which is not nothing, right? But it for me, in terms of legacy, it's like less. I don't care. I just don't care. Good for you. Pat on the head. Pat on the old gray head. but it doesn't mean anything for like how I can compare you to Vijay or whatever. Vijay's always going to be a better golfer than Padraig Harrington, even if he wins 50 senior US Opens, because Vijay was the number one golfer in the world. He stayed there for a while. He won more tournaments and they each have three majors. So that's never going to change for me.
Whereas you would say probably similar than comparing a Harrington to a Nick Price, who also has three majors. That's actually Harrington's legacy and the fact he's continued to be so relevant for so long and all of the other things probably does have him at a higher level than a Nick Price. I think it sort of feeds the mystique of Harrington, the fact that he's still out there and he's still winning and he's still, and even the way he talks about it is so much better than everyone else. Like he's the first to, when we recorded, when we did our little putting competition last year, among the 3 hours of us doing our short 18 holes on a putting green that it took us to complete it, he did talk about, I think he just won the senior majors the week before of, you know, he doesn't count them as majors. Yeah. He counts them as a nice thing and I guess proves that he's best of the old guys, which is what he wants to be. But if anything, it's, you know, his struggles on the main tour probably show the difference that is there.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And it's like there's no other really equivalent in sports where, you know, golf, you can do it because it doesn't require you to run or jump, right? I mean, like any other sport, by the time you're 55, you're not wanting to go play soccer or basketball or whatever. So it's great. I mean, like the Nick Price debate is interesting because Nick Price did rise to number one, very brief, but he is a number one world golfer. But I kind of agree. I'd have to look more closely, but I think I agree with you that, Harrington is better.
Well, also two opens better than one. So Harrington has two opens and one PGA, prices two PGAs and one open.
Definitely, yeah, you definitely take the two opens if you were, you know.
And look, maybe it's I'm that bit younger and missed some of the Nick Price dominance, but
yeah,
I just sort of think Harrington's personality gives them something a little bit extra.
Yeah, so here's the thing with Price. Price had an unbelievable peak from 92 to 94. Like, won everything. So he has more wins than Harrington has. And, like, during that stretch, he was better than any stretch of Harrington's career that he was in. So probably looking at it, honestly, I'd probably have to give the nod to Price on that merits.
You're really not endearing yourself to your audience. Why don't you just go and stay in England while you're there next week?
I'm going to stay in England and then go to Zimbabwe, where they welcome me with open arms now.
yes, absolutely. Your point was that he'd never lost a Ryder Cup?
He never lost a Ryder Cup as a captain, too. So,
wow, that's very true. That's very true. Question for Shane. And a hi, Shane. Great field in Scotland this week. Does the time difference make it a smaller event in America than a regular PGA Tour event, or will it get better viewing figures because Lynx Golf looks so great on TV?
Yeah, it'll diminish it just a little. It's just the logistics of it. And I love the Scottish Open, so it's not a knock on it. Although I do think they need to get it off that course. There's so many great courses up there. Let's have a Rota for the Scottish Open too. But it's just the reality of it. And it kind of, like, as dumb as this sounds, it, like, took me by surprise this morning. I went on Twitter and there was some clip of Rory, and I was just like, what? And then I looked at the leaderboard. I'm like, oh yeah, he's already done. He's already 5 under. Tom Kim's 5 under. So it's like, on the weekend, it's a little better, but it does sort of take you by surprise. What ends up happening is that your life goes on, and all of a sudden it's 11 a.m. and things are mostly done, and you go, oh shit, I missed that. Weekend mornings, it's cool, but I'm sure the ratings will be way lower than normal, just because they groove you into that afternoon viewing habits on the weekends. And by, you know, I don't think they do it on a delay anymore. I think they probably used to do it on a delay. Now it's just live and, you know, it's over at 2 o'clock, but that's just the way it goes.
I'm probably a bit of a hypocrite, because I know when we talk about this with the Irish Open and its location and should it always be on a Lynx course, I'm like, well, actually, the atmosphere, say, the last couple of years at the K Club, which is half an hour from Dublin, is a parkland course, obviously a brilliant parkland course. I have to say that because Gary's the pro there. But, you know, it's a great parkland course. And because it's so close to the capital, it brings in enormous crowds that, you know, regardless of even the Trump factor with Doombeg this year, where the Irish Open's going to be, you know, incredible Lynx course. Mm. It's tough to get to. There is no real village around it or anything like that, that you get an atmosphere across the weekend, but it's a much better, tougher, proper Irish golf course. And likewise in Scotland, you go, like, I kind of feel with the Scottish Open nearly, would you go, why don't we just play it at St. Andrews every year, except the year the Open's on there. And then, you know, we go to one of the other great courses that we have here. Yeah. But as you say, this sort of mishmash that they have at the moment, again, it's probably closer to Edinburgh than a lot of them. Maybe it makes it easier for the players to get in and out. It's
right.
You know, they're not having to travel for a couple of hours. But yeah, it is a weird setup for the week before the Open. And obviously we're a little bit bitter that the Scottish always still get the week before the Open.
Yeah, well, I mean, it shows you what a valuable slot it is, because it's not a signature event, but the field is really good. I think 14 of the top 20 they ended up with. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, it's a little bit like having the Ryder Cup at Glen Eagles or basically anywhere they have the Ryder Cup. It's like, how are we not having these on Lynx courses? But financial, logistical concerns, all that kind of stuff.
Shane, Rory talking that the National Opens should be treated differently than the John Deere, etc. How would that actually work?
Yeah, it's tough. Well, I mean, I think we may have talked about this last week. It's really logistically hard to imagine where, okay, let's say the Canadian Open is the signature event or a championship series, as they're going to call it. Well, then you have a closed field and it's not a National Open anymore, unless you somehow give them 20 sponsors exemptions to add some Canadians in, which I don't think they're going to do, because they're going to be very strict. The whole thing of the plan is you got to be strict about these things. Otherwise, it gets to the sloppy stuff that we're in now. Okay, what if it's a Challenger Series event? Well, if it's at the same time as a Championship Series event, if it's on one of the same weeks, which a lot, I think all but seven are going to be. Then if there's like big Canadians that are in the top of the world, they're going to be playing in the championship series event. So you lose that. You may have more leeway in that case to make it a national open. So I think the best case scenario, I think what they have to do is make it one of the Challenger series events that's not on the championship series events and give them exemptions to have more Canadians in. I think that's probably the best way to do it. But you know, it's a little bit like when Rory says that, I'm like, I'm sorry, the Canadian Open's really not a true national open now. You know, the US Open kind of is, the Open kind of is, but they're also, yeah, what I guess you have to define for me what that means, right? Because it's obviously not a closed national open where we're just figuring out the best Canadian golfer or US golfer or UK golfer. That hasn't been that for an incredibly long time. So what does it mean? What does it mean, and what is it that you're protecting? I guess would be my question. Because like, look, if we talk about the Canadian Open like it's some big tragic victim, we're really kind of overplaying the status that the Canadian Open has. It's not that important an event. It hasn't been for years. So that's kind of my take on it.
Yeah, sort of a tricky one because again, the size of the United States is gives it a unfair disadvantage, I guess, in that. So what you only get, only the one national open there should be taken seriously.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas, the Irish Open is huge for us here because it's the only time we get quality golf.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's important. It's definitely important to the Irish players, but likewise, if I don't know, maybe you get 10 tournaments in Ohio, but if you're in a place, if you're in Pennsylvania and there's a population 10 times the size of Ireland, you're only getting one tournament a year. It's kind of important for the people there as well.
Totally. Yeah, completely. It's not as important. I mean, the national identity of the Irish Open is way more important than the people of Pennsylvania going, oh, you know, whatever's here. But it's you know, it to me, it's not that big a deal, to be honest. I don't worry too much about the Canadian Open. I can't get excited for that or angry about it.
Yeah. And turn up at all the other national opens then.
Yeah. Like, are you gonna go play the Indian Open? I
Yeah,
think.
he is.
Oh, he is. Yeah. He's
He's going to
probably
play the
going on.
Australian
He's
Open.
going to Australia too.
Yeah.
Well, good for him. Good for him. Whatever. Good for him.
I want Scotty to come out and be like, national, where are these places? But
Well, that's like, do you remember? Were you there when the Indian reporter was asking Scotty
yes.
about if he played, you know, and Scotty's like, no.
Like it got
No, I'm
overshadowed
not.
by the because that was the same press conference, wasn't it, where he gave the
Yeah.
"this is not a fulfilling life" press
Yeah.
conference. It sort of got overshadowed from Scotty being like, "Yeah, I kind of feel like all the best players are in America, and why would I
Yeah,
bother leaving?"
I know.
And
Well, it's
then.
like, okay, in theory, you're like, oh, how cool would it be? It's like sort of like a LIV Golf of national opens. Like, what if we went from India to Australia and it was like the F1 circuit? But in practice, especially if you're an American, you're like, screw that,
Well,
dude. I
sorry,
don't want to wake up early to.
that's exactly what has happened in world golf, in that the
Yeah,
Americans,
yeah.
of whom probably what 60 of the top 100 in the world are Americans, are like,
Yeah.
nah. So you want us to play a worldwide circuit when
Yeah.
we could just play at home for probably more money? Yeah, I don't see the selling point. Yeah, Scotty very much shot that down last year between his answer to that and then at the end when he won the Open at Portrush, and we were all sort of giving it. And I think the MC at the prize giving was trying to give, obviously, you've been all business this week, Scotty. Now you're here in Ireland. You get a real chance tonight to go and savor the Irish hospitality, to really embrace this country. Maybe go out to the Giant's Causeway and get a photograph there. Scotty's like, yeah, I think we're probably just get in the private jet as quickly as we possibly can and
Yeah, get back to
get back to
Texas.
Texas.
Yeah,
Like,
totally.
yeah,
Totally.
but like, I have
These
not.
aren't the most like worldly people to begin with. Yeah, it's like, but you do have to appreciate the honesty a little bit. You know, there's
Yeah.
just no BS. Be like,
You're like,
no.
nah, I really don't think I'm going to be giving you your
Yeah.
stereotypical, "Oh, I'm having pints."
Yeah. It's like, I'll have one Miller Lite on the plane home and play with my kid. Thanks.
James C sends a message. Hi, hopefully might run into you at the Open next week. Beware, Shane.
Uh-oh.
He'll be the guy wearing the England jersey, is Shane.
Yeah,
James, if
I'm
you're
going to
looking
be
for him.
going full England. Yep.
As an American, he says in an accusatory tone. I might have just added that.
I think you're reading that.
It's a very wholesome question. What's your favorite Open venue?
So I was looking about how many I've been to. How many would you guess, knowing me, that I've been to, Nathan? Like, what would be your ballpark of how many
I would
Opens?
say, I'd say you've been to nine.
So this would be my sixth one only.
Okay.
And of the previous five, two were at Royal Liverpool. So I've only been to four open venues. So it was Portrush, Troon, Liverpool, and St. Andrews in 2015, not in 2022. Of those, so I think there's just such a romance about St. Andrews and such a wonderful town that I'll give the nod to St. Andrews overall. In terms of the course, you know, it's. Look, I think a lot of them are cool. I think Portrush visually was the most striking, so I probably like Portrush the best of those. St. Andrews is really nice, and the history's great, and the town is by far the best of any of them that I've been to. So, yeah, those are my two answers. Portrush as a course, St. Andrews as an overall experience. Of the ones remaining on the rota where I'd like to go, I would love to see Carnoustie, I think, number one. Which is not on the in the upcoming, even though but they only do like the next 2 or 3 years. But yeah, like next year will be Royal Lytham if I go there. That would be a new one. But yeah, if you gave me one of like where could you go if you just have one left, it would be to Carnoustie because that course is like when I was at Troon, I talked to an old pro who, you know, been playing Scottish golf for his whole life and now he leads tours and he was just like, there is no course like Carnoustie. It's the best in all of Scotland, it's the best in the UK. So I'd like to go there and see that.
In a shocking development, I've actually been to five of them.
Which courses have you been to?
I've been to Turnberry, to
Nice.
Portrush, to Carnoustie, to Troon, and to Royal St. George.
Oh, you've like your list is so much better than mine.
Yeah, I think Turnberry, maybe because it's probably never going to go back, and it was the first one I covered, and it was obviously the most insane finish with Stuart Sink and Tom Watson and all of that. And the weather was beautiful. And it's just such a spectacular walk around the place and an incredible golf course, and then had the finale as well. So, yeah, I think all you need, again, everyone's experience is slightly different. If you play the courses, you probably have a different, slightly different view on it as well. But the only thing with Turnberry, again, was what I've just sort of criticized some of these links courses. There was no. You were sort of staying in, well, actually, I stayed in Stranraer, which was bloody grim, I can tell you, which is about an hour away from Turnberry, a very small port village, which was, there was many dodgy visits to dodgy pubs, but like Glasgow was the main sort of point. Whereas, you know, Troon, you're right there in the town afterwards.
Troon was beautiful. It really was a
Portrush,
beautiful
obviously
town.
Portrush last year as well. You're there. Like you walk out and in 2 minutes, you're sort of smack bang in the center of what it's all happening, which I think is kind of a big part of the open experience that, you know, on the Monday night, as we were, you're in the Harbour Bar and Colin Morikawa was over in the corner. Or JJ Spawn's having dinner.
I think Southport will be kind of like that. We're in the town anyway, but I don't think the town is very nice from what I've heard. I've heard it's not like the greatest town, but I'll be
That's the
out.
clip. That's the clip, everybody. Get that one up.
I'll be out. Look, I'll be out with the blokes and the lads in my England jersey, getting smashed, cheering on our team.
All right. Well, listen, you enjoy that. You enjoy your trip to England. I'd be sorry to miss you. Enjoy Dave McIntyre for the next couple of weeks. And we'll talk to Shane Ryan on the Ryan Line very soon.
See you guys.
Good luck. Goodbye. Good night.
Starter kit right here. Now Mama Lou makes chocolate.
Hello, it's Owen Chehan here from Off the Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves, and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run. You can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.